Hey guys, what's going on? Dahani Joseph here, host of The Press Room. I am here. Before we get started with the episode, I just want to give a quick disclaimer. One, apologies for the episode going up late. Usually goes up a bit earlier on Mondays than this. Been busy, been traveling, whole lot of stuff been going on. All good things in Chicago right now for the National Association of Black Journalists Convention. That's in a few days, looking forward to it. But I wanted to get this episode out. Quick disclaimer. The audio on my end sounds a little weird, sounds a little muffled. I think that was something I did with the settings, so I apologize for that. Tried the best I did in post to clear that up, but it's really hard to do. Outside of that, very excited for you guys to see what we have in store for you today. Noah Eagle, we get into his career, talking about his Syracuse days, him as a broadcaster now, what he's doing in the future. He has the Olympics that are currently going on as we speak. This episode was pre-recorded last week, but currently he's at the Olympics covering the USA men's and women's teams. Very excited for that. Stay tuned. Enjoy the episode. Like, share, rate, all that good stuff. Take care, y'all. Enjoy the episode. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to The Press Room, where we tell the stories behind the storytellers. I'm your host, Dahani Joseph, and today we are joined by Noah Eagle. Noah, you may have had the single greatest five-year stretch in broadcasting ever. I mean, look, right out of college, you got the job as a Clippers radio play-by-play announcer. You spent time doing Big Ten Saturday football. You've done Summer League for NBA, Olympics 3x3 basketball. And this year may just have been the pinnacle of the blossoming career, where you covered a Super Bowl and won a Sports Emmy for Outstanding Personality Emerging on Air, which I think that might be that in the background right over there. But Noah, how you doing, man? How's everything going?
Everything is great, man. I appreciate the love, appreciate the support as always, and the Cuse love is very real, very strong. So thanks for having me on. I love the line, what the stories behind the storytellers. That's fantastic stuff. So. Per usual, I expect nothing less from you. I expect nothing but greatness, but you deliver right off the bat. So we're ready to rock.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And you know, we spoke a few months back when it came to my class with Professor Prato while I was out here in LA, and just told me a lot about your story. And you know, although we both know the Syracuse, I feel like you went to Syracuse Plus. I mean, the stuff that you have been doing is just phenomenal, honestly. And like, we touched on some of the accolades. We're going to touch on the stories in a little bit, but first I want to get into sort of your upbringing, your background. Did you always want to become a broadcaster, or was there something else that sort of stuck out early on in your career?
Yeah, I think that it's been well documented at this point that I was a weirdly delusional kid, apparently, and maybe had some deeper issues that went unnoticed, but for whatever reason, you know, when people would ask me as a kid what I wanted to be, I would respond very confidently. I was a confident child, but I would respond confidently saying I wanted to be a TV dentist, which is very much not real, very much something I created in my head of Dr. Phil filling a molar, Dr. Oz installing a crown, you name it. I felt I could do it. And then I realized if I wanted to be a dentist, I probably would have to go to further school. So I was like, you know what? I'll just play in the NBA. That'll be a good route for me. If I can just, you know, be a great point guard, maybe make a couple all-star teams, win a championship, I'll feel like a success in life. And then I stopped growing at about 5'8" and had limited athletic ability. So that was out of the question as well. So I got to see this path of broadcasting and this world of broadcasting growing up with my dad, and you know, it was something I was drawn to, and I was always a good public speaker, and it was something that I was comfortable doing, you know, speaking in front of people and certainly speaking about sports. So for me, start connecting all the dots, and it started to really create a clearer picture. And so I went in from there, but I didn't really do anything until I got to Syracuse. And then once I did, it was full steam ahead.
Yeah, you touched on your dad a little bit. Ryan Eagle, he's done play-by-play for years and stuff with the Nets on Yes Network. You know, done stuff with football, just years of experience there. I want to touch on you going from, you know, not doing anything really to going to Syracuse, which, by the way, fascinating to hear that, because people I know that go to Syracuse, they've done stuff in high school. You know, they were doing, like, the morning announcements, doing play-by-play on local high school games. So for you to not have done anything and for you to do what you eventually did, pretty remarkable, because I didn't come in doing anything either. So just that connection to see that I can make it so, because, you know, you did something pretty incredible yourself. But what clubs and organizations on campus did you do to sort of hone your skills as a broadcaster?
Yeah, I do think there's value, by the way, to arriving on campus as a blank slate. You know, I think that's kind of how I viewed myself, was I didn't have any bad habits that I needed to break yet. I didn't have any habits yet. I just showed up and basically did all the work. So the work entailed a lot of going to WAER, which was my main hub. You know, that was what I felt was going to be most important to my eventual success. And I knew that if I wanted to be someone who left my mark in Central New York, that was the place that was definitely going to be at the forefront. So that's where I really dove in first. I worked at Z89 as well, WJPZ. You know, that was, for me, the best way to get the earliest amount of reps. So, you know, it takes time, as you know, to get on air at any of these places. And if you didn't go to Syracuse or you don't currently go to Syracuse, you might not be familiar with the landscape there. WAER is a professional NPR station. It is a legit ladder to climb before you can ever get legitimately on the air. So for me, I knew that that was going to be the case. My dad had laid it out for me of, hey, if you want to be successful, if you want to do this, you got to go here and you got to make sure that you handle your business. So that was priority number one, Z89. And then by the time I felt like I'd given myself a good jump start on both of those through my freshman year, I come back for my sophomore year and I slowly started getting involved at Citrus TV. Eventually, by junior year for me, that's when the ACC network was established. That was the first year of the ACC network at Syracuse. And so allowing for some of us students to actually have TV opportunities to call games and to host in studio, that was massive. That was something that was a game changer. And so I took full advantage of that as well. But my whole philosophy was, you do as much as you possibly can. Anything that's offered to you, any type of stuff, sports, non-sports, different type of sports. You know, I tried all the sports that were offered to me. I tried everything outside of sports. I tried every position on air and off air that was offered to me. And I just wanted to see what I liked, what I didn't like. I hosted a game show for the PBS station WCNY. So I just said yes to every opportunity while maintaining the college student in me and still making sure that I enjoyed that experience. But I definitely don't regret a single thing of what I did when I was on campus. I felt like I exhausted all my opportunities and made a lot of friends in the process.
You know, you mentioned saying yes to everything. I think that's so crucial at such a young age, because one, you're still just trying to find who you are as a person, right? So say yes to all opportunities, but specifically when it comes to being a broadcaster and in sports in particular, you might have a interest in, let's say, basketball. That's my thing. I love the NBA. So I might want to cover Syracuse men's basketball or whatever school you go to, covering the basketball team. But can you talk about the importance of just understanding, you know, having to say yes to everything, because you don't know where opportunity will really come from?
Yeah, and you don't know, kind of what I was referring to before, you don't know what you like until you do it. You know, that was the advice I got from Dan Duva, Cuse guy. He had at that time still been in Syracuse working with the Syracuse Crunch and as an adjunct professor, now the voice of the Vegas Golden Knights, before I ever got to campus, said, do everything. Try it all, because you just don't know what's going to stick. And so I could have gotten there and I might have tried producing and fallen in love with it. I might have loved having control and feeling like I was in charge of the broadcast. I didn't. It just wasn't necessarily what I loved. I enjoyed doing it though, and I think it made me a better broadcaster by trying that as well. So for me, it was, okay, what if I really like news? Let me try anchoring the news. Let me try reporting. Let me see if I like that. What if I really like entertainment? Let me see if I can do that. What if I love doing game shows? Let me see if I can do that. Voiceover work, whatever it might be. But if you don't try, you'll never know. And I think if you're dead set when you get there as a freshman on, hey, I want to do play-by-play and that's the only focus, you might miss out on something either you're really good at or you really, really enjoy. And then that would be a shame to have never actually found it. I think everybody, there's something in this business for everybody. You just have to be willing to search for it. And that's what I think the 4 years of college are best suited for.
Yeah, and I want to piggyback off that a little bit just from my own experience. Going to Syracuse, I always wanted to be on TV. That was the goal for me. I was like, you know, I'm going to go to Citrus TV. I'm going to be on all the shows, be on Q's Countdown, on the bench, all those shows that you know and love. Eventually, HC Network as well. But eventually, I sort of steered away from TV. TV will always be the goal for me. That's what I love to do, and that's what I want to do. But the writing aspect, going to the Daily Orange, that's something I tried late second year, and I fell in love with it, and I stuck with it. And now I'm writing at Yahoo Sports for my internship. So I think that just goes to show that, you know, try everything. You never know what might stick, what you might be best at, and where your career might go because of it.
1,000%. I think it's a perfect example right there. You can still find a way to do both, but it just makes you more versatile if you're more willing to do other stuff than what you were just initially dead set on. And so I love to hear the stories like that because you hear them all the time from kids that, and look, to your point, you started second semester of your sophomore year, right? So it's never too late. You could start your second semester of senior year and get legit opportunities and still feel like, okay, you know what? I found what I love. Let me go further into this. And you've got so much time in front of you. So don't ever feel like, you know what? I didn't do it yet. I'm not going to get there. Go for it. Why not? This is the time to do it. So I would explore all options while you still have it.
Definitely. I want to touch on, you know, just having self-doubts. Because, you know, as young people, you always have self-doubts like, oh, am I doing this right? Is this where I'm supposed to be in life? And no matter how great you are at something, you're great at what you do. But was there any moments where you had self-doubts? And then was there a moment that sort of reassured you that you were working towards the right path?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as I was just starting out, certainly when I was in college and then really even right after college ended, I wasn't sure if I was at the right level at any point. You know, as I was going through, I'm like, am I doing this the right way? Am I good at this? Am I good? You just don't know because you've never done it and you don't know what your level is supposed to be at that time. And so I was really fortunate to have my dad because he had been through everything. So I knew that I could rely on his experience. And that's really where he was the best for me, was not necessarily saying, hey, this is how you do this or this is how you do that. It was more of a reassurance of you're in the right place. You're doing things the right way. Just keep trusting that process, right? It's not the Philadelphia 76ers, but you trust the process the right way here and you're going to end up in the right place. And I think I needed that own reassurance, especially as I was going through it in college and right after college. And when I was getting into newer sports, you know, if I had never done a football game on TV, it's the first time I'm doing it, how do I know if I sound good or not? I'm just going off of instincts. And so it takes time, but I think the more you do it, the more reps you get, the more confident in it you get. And then it's all about self-belief at that point. And I've got a strong self-belief. I feel like I know when I do well and I know when I don't do well and I know how to fix it. And so I'm more than willing to be harsh on myself when the time is right for it. But there's always going to be doubt in some way. It's about how do you counteract that? How do you prepare the right way to know that you are putting up 150% maximum effort? Because that's the way I always saw it, is so long as you're putting in the most possible effort that you can, then what else could you possibly ask from yourself? And what is there to be any doubt of yourself on if you're doing everything in your power? So that's the way I viewed it really ever since.
Well, you put a lot of effort in during your time at Syracuse. I mean, many people coming out of Syracuse, coming out of Newhouse in particular, they're able to find starting jobs, maybe in a smaller town, you know, maybe doing production for a while before they do what they want to do with talent. But no, your starting job could be considered someone's dream job. You got the gig as a play-by-play announcer for Clippers Radio. How did that job come about for a 22-year-old fresh out of college?
Yeah, and I mean, it was a dream job for me as well. I, similar to you, was a passionate NBA fan from birth, basically, and love everything to do with the game, love everything to do with the league, a historian of it. So for me to get to call NBA basketball consistently, that was awesome. I mean, that was everything that I had hoped for. So yeah, it was a dream job at that time. It all came about, and a lot of the credit goes to Professor Stomsky at Syracuse, Olivia Stomsky, who, you know, basically what happened was my senior year, she reached out to me, and unbeknownst to me, the people that were running the search for Ralph Lawler's replacement, who had been the voice of the Clippers for 40 years, had reached out to her, and she had been still active in the industry. They were co-workers of hers. They trusted her and knew the position she was in. And the Clippers are a unique organization because they have a very unique team owner, and that's Steve Ballmer, who is always thinking outside the box and who's always trying to find ways to reinvent and be different and really be ahead of the curve. And I felt like that's why he wanted a wide net search. He wanted as many options and as many different types of people as possibly given to him for that position. And at that position at the time was TV announcer for the Clippers. So I just happened to be one of the names mentioned by Olivia Stomsky as either recently graduated Syracuse alums or soon to be graduated Syracuse alums. And so I was put on that list. I sent her a reel of all my basketball work, sent it to them. I sent her a resume, sent it to them. And I heard nothing for month and a half, maybe longer. She didn't even tell me who it was for. She just said it's for a basketball job. And then I was driving right after the NCAA tournament, and I was going to a radio show that I had done every Monday. And I get a call from an LA number, and I pick it up. And basically they say, we want to interview you and audition you next week for the LA Clippers job. And I'm like, what do you want to do? You said LA Clippers? This is a joke. What is this? So I fly out the next week, interview, audition, red eye back. I've got finals and whatnot to finish up. I get a message when I get back. Steve Ballmer would like to meet you one-on-one in Seattle next week. Fly out to Seattle, meet with him for 90 minutes, just the two of us in a big conference room. I leave there saying, I said to him, you know, Mr. Ballmer, I just want to thank you so much, and I just want to let you know before I leave that if I get this job, the Clippers and this organization become my entire life. I just want to let you know that. He goes, good to know. I leave. I go back to Syracuse on another red eye. I graduate. I go to Chicago for the NBA Combine stuff is happening. I drive back or fly back to Syracuse, drive back to New Jersey after packing up all the rest of my stuff. And that weekend got a call from the president of the Clippers saying, hey, we're going to move our radio guy up to TV and opens up the radio job. And we'd love for you to take it. Take the weekend to decide. I'm like, I could decide right now, but sure, I'll take it. Yeah, no problem. Call them back on Saturday and or on Sunday and said, yeah, I'm all in. Let's do it. And that's kind of how it started. And just let it rip once I got there.
Man, that's an incredible story. Also, just to show the power of connections in this industry. Because Professor Stomsky, you know, she's done it all. She's done some with the Lakers. She's connected it now with sports in Los Angeles and really all over the world. So that's just a testament to, you know, how important connections are in this industry. And eventually, you know, after doing Clipper Radio, you've done that for a few years, went on to doing television with Fox and CBS, football, college football. But I want to talk about the NFL for a moment. You contributed to the biggest comeback in NFL history, 30 points, when the Minnesota Vikings defeated the Indianapolis Colts, 39-36 to be exact, December of 2022. Now, me personally, I've never done play-by-play in my life. But from what I've learned and heard, once the team is down by about 30, the broadcasters, you know, you break the glass, you break out the filler material because the game looks to be over. Can you describe what it was like holding that game and what it was like as the Vikings began to make their comeback?
Yeah, it was a bizarre turn of events, obviously. We've never seen that before. You know, the one thing that did happen, my dad texted me at halftime, it was 33-0, and said, just don't give up on the game. And the best thing for me was that I had been doing Clippers games long enough that I had seen comebacks of 35 points from the Clippers, which was the second largest comeback in NBA history. I had seen playoff comebacks, including 25 points down in Game 6 against the Utah Jazz to eventually get to the Western Conference Finals. They had come back from 25-plus more than any team in NBA history in a single season. So I kind of had this idea of, like, you know what? Let's give it a little bit of time into the second half, see what happens. Myself and Nate Burleson were in the booth just discussing, hey, if it doesn't get better, what are we going to go to? What do you want to talk about? How do you want to kind of frame all of this? All that stuff. But at that point, once we saw there was a little bit of life we just let the game do most of the work. You know, you say I contributed. I wouldn't say I did anything in terms of the result, but I was happy to be there. I was happy to feel the energy, happy to just get a vibe of something like that. Because as my dad told me after that game, I could call NFL football for 40 years, and I probably will never get another game like that. So considering it was, I think, the second non-slime-related NFL regular season game I ever did, that was pretty good. I'll take that 11 times out of 10.
Yeah, we're going to touch on that slime that you mentioned in a little bit. I want to stay on your father. You mentioned that he sent you a text at halftime. You know, I'm not sure you've been told this, but you remind me a lot of Bronny James. And here's why. Not because of your hops, although I'm sure you have a mean vertical. I haven't seen it. All right, I'm going to have to see that. We're going to have to stitch that into the podcast. But the reason why, many people, you know, they use the word nepotism when it comes to you guys' rise in the professional ranks of your careers. And we mentioned your father covered Nets games and a lot of broadcasting, college basketball, you name it, he's done it. When people say Noah Eagle is a product of nepotism, you say what?
It doesn't bother me. I mean, and people might think that I'm just saying that. I'm not. You know, the way that I look at it is, when I first got to Syracuse, and I've told this many times, but when I first got there, I wouldn't attach my last name for the first 2 years being there. Because in my own head, I just wanted to build my own thing. I wanted to showcase that I was willing to work twice as hard. I was willing to do whatever it took. I was willing to just be one of the guys and do any of the tasks. You know, I wasn't trying to cut any corners, get ahead, or anything like that. But once I did establish that, then I felt like, okay, you know what? Now I can go full steam ahead and just go for it and attach my full name. And that was something that my dad sat me down. He said, you don't have to be ashamed. You know, and this is similar if you want to use the LeBron example. LeBron James is super well-respected within the basketball world, rightfully so. He's the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. He's fourth all-time in assists. He's got records up the you-know-what from his entire 22-year NBA career and then some. I mean, he was the chosen one and has somehow delivered on that. So that's incredibly impressive. And I say 22 knowing that year 22 is coming up. With that being said, just because he's well-respected doesn't mean that Bronny is guaranteed to be a great player. What I like about this whole situation, and it's the same thing in broadcasting, it's results-driven at the end of the day, in my opinion. The results will speak for themselves, and I'm very much rooting for Bronny to deliver on those results and have a long and successful NBA career, because I think it's great for the sport, and I think it's great for really anybody watching. It's an awesome storyline. It's no different than Ken Griffey Jr. and his dad, right? Ken Griffey Jr. is a Hall of Famer, not because of his dad, because of his own talent. I look at it the same way. You know, if I'm going to step up and do a game, I better do a really good job. Now, I probably had gotten opportunities early because of my name, and I'm not going to shy away from that, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't prepared. It doesn't mean that I wasn't talented enough to do it. It doesn't mean that I'm not in the right place at the right time. It just means that maybe I had to take advantage of an opportunity at an earlier age. I always feel like if you're talented and you work really hard, eventually things are going to click. It just is going to depend on the path and the timeline. And my timeline was very fortunate for me. And I'm very thankful for that path and that timeline. But I'm definitely not going to apologize for it at the same time. And so that's kind of the way I look at it. I don't really get offended. If someone wants to believe that, that's on them. The only people I really take any sort of criticism or advice from are the people that I love and respect and my coworkers who I value their opinion. And that's really that at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, like you said, it's about results. You know, it doesn't really matter what's your last name and who your father is, who your mother is, as long as you're delivering and doing what you need to do. I think that's the bottom line, especially in industries like broadcasting and sports. The results are the end all be all. If you don't win in sports, if you're not putting up good numbers in broadcasting, if you're not giving the best performance that you possibly can to elevate the company that you're working for, to tell the story the best way you can of the game. And what does it matter if you're an Eagle, if you're a James, right? It doesn't really matter at that point.
Exactly. And that's always been my viewpoint. And so it's probably driven me to work even harder than I would have otherwise, and I'm okay with that because I know that no matter what, I'm always going to have extra eyeballs as a result. I'm totally cool with that. I'm ready for it. I'm primed for it. And so long as I'm putting in the maximum effort, as discussed before, I'll have no regrets or no real feel of, you know what, maybe I'm not ready for this. I'll always feel like I'm ready to go and continue in this trajectory, hopefully, for a long time to come.
You put in the maximum effort. The results have shown. And the results have ended up with you covering a Super Bowl this year. I mean, that's just incredible in itself. Congratulations on that, even though it's a few months removed, covering the Super Bowl between the Kansas City Chiefs, San Francisco 49ers. But I'd imagine a little bit different than what you imagined they would be covering a Super Bowl, as it was on Nickelodeon. You mentioned this line before. What was that experience like for you? And then more importantly, what was that preparation like for that game? Because I'd imagine it was more than just X's and O's when it comes to SpongeBob and Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, I had done a number of the Nickelodeon broadcasts before, so I had an idea of what I needed for a game like that and a broadcast like that. So the preparation is a lot different than a normal game. It's a lot more rewatching Nickelodeon shows, making sure I'm tuned in to everything, and especially knowing that I had SpongeBob and Patrick, going back and just brushing up on as much SpongeBob knowledge as I possibly could. But that broadcast, that experience was something that I will cherish forever. It was, for a kid who grew up on it, a kid who loved watching SpongeBob and hoping one day he could hang out with them, to actually get to hang out in Bikini Bottom and call a Super Bowl with them, I mean, that is beyond bucket list item. That is something that almost sounds fake. And so the fact that I got to do it is really cool. And Nate, again, Burleson is the perfect partner in that type of stuff, in that type of environment. He just brings perfect energy. Our whole production team is off the charts. They put in so much time and effort into making sure that all the graphics and all the elements are ready to go. It just makes it easy for us to basically step up and just embrace our inner kids and have a good time. And so that's what we did. And we got a pretty good game to go along with it. So, yeah, a really cool experience, one I'll never forget, and hopefully one that people really enjoyed as much as we did.
Noah, before we let you go, I want to touch briefly. You've done Olympics before, 3x3 basketball. The next stop for you, talking about this before we started, is Paris, serving as a play-by-play voice for Team USA men's and women's basketball for the Olympics. What are you most looking forward to on this trip?
Man, it's going to be awesome. I mean, it's going to be an awesome – I'm doing men and women, as you said, and to have the names, some of these all-time great names in the sport of basketball, certainly just on Team USA. I mean, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, those are all-time greats. Anthony Davis also on the 75th anniversary team. So you've got four guys that are on the all-time 75 greatest NBA players on top of what many believe could become the future face of the NBA and Anthony Edwards, Joel Embiid, who has been an MVP and multi-time scoring champ, Devin Booker, a many-time All-Star, Drew Holiday, we've seen just how incredible he is, Tyrese Halliburton, one of the best set-up guys in the entire world right now, Bam Adebayo and Derek White. It's a bomb squad. It's the Avengers of basketball. And then on the women's side, Diana Taurasi, to get to be there for what is going to be, in all likelihood, I mean, she could try to play till she's 47, but in all likelihood, her final Olympics and what could be her sixth gold medal, that's really cool. Asia Wilson, I think, is going to be an all-time name in the history of basketball. Breanna Stewart, obviously, the Syracuse legend herself. You've got Kelsey Plum and Jackie Young taking the step up from 3x3. Sabrina Ionescu. And then I'm excited for players like Alyssa Thomas and for Nafisa Collier and others to continue to build their own brands, continue to move the women's game forward. I think that's going to be really good for women's basketball. So excited to just be there for that. The Olympics, I think, this year are going to be really fun for a variety of reasons, but considering there were no fans in the stands over the last couple here, Summer Olympics in Tokyo, Winter Olympics in Beijing, I think that's going to be the energy of it is going to be really special, just as the, hey, we're finally back. So that's going to be cool, and I think it's the best and most challenging men's field in Olympic basketball history. France, really good. Canada, loaded. Serbia has a three-time MVP and a lot of NBA talent. Australia coming off a medal in Tokyo, is still going to be good. Spain is always good. Greece has Giannis. I mean, they just teams are going to be better than they've been in the past. So it's going to be a legitimate challenge for the United States to win gold. And with this super team, how will they come together as a cohesive unit is going to be fun to watch.
It's going to be an interesting story that's going to be told this summer in Paris. And Noah, your story is only just beginning. I want to thank you again, man, for joining the press room, joining us on this episode, talking about your career, talking about the ups. Not too many downs. A lot of ups here. I appreciate you so much for coming on the press room, man.
Yeah, I mean, listen, ups both in the sports world, the broadcasting world, and in my vertical. A lot of ups just all around. So I appreciate you, Tahani. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, of course, man. We're going to be tuned into the Paris Olympics, and I'm sure more football, more basketball, more everything for you coming 2024 and in the future. Thanks so much, man.